Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, the BBC rise to the rescue. We discuss the corporation's plans to reach out to its struggling rivals. Also in the podcast...
It's a very, very big company. It's based in Chicago, but it spans coast to coast, and it's got 12 different major newspapers and 23 TV companies, and often those operate together within a city and have a media monopoly.
We hear from our man in America as one of the nation's biggest media powerhouses faces bankruptcy. Plus, the Mail on Sunday's record label, ITV's Project Penguin, and...
Once upon a time... Not so long ago... There was a little girl, and her name was Emily.
There's a bit of nostalgia too as we pay tribute to Bagpuss creator Oliver Postgate. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, ITV announced that it's to drop coverage of the boat race this year, but are this week's media talkers up the creek without a paddle? Emily Bell is The Guardian's Director of Digital Content. There's probably a pun about coxless fours in there somewhere that I probably shouldn't make.
No, indeed, I'm in the blue boat.
Excellent.
Dark blue boat.
Okay, James, I don't know what that means really. I didn't go to Oxford or Cambridge. James Robinson is... go on, what?
No, I was going to say that. It's been a heated
up
debate.
Proletariat.
It's been a heated debate on our blogs this week about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes, BBC.
Well, will we come on to that?
How Oxbridge are we in the pod?
You can also hear James...
Is it just me?
Is it just you? It might be.
I went to Harvard.
James Robinson, that is. The Observer's media editor. Life jacket is under your seat, James. We'll be joined by two other special panellists and TV writer Gareth McLean later on. But with speeders at the ready, let's dive in.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
Last week we talked feverishly about the questionable future of Project Kangaroo and the possibility of opening up the iPlayer to other broadcasters instead. Some of our listeners, Emily, were very dismissive about that on the blog, particularly Phaser.
That's because he understands the complex technological
yes.
arguments behind it. Which
However,
is,
as yourselves. The BBC's online catch-up service celebrated its one-year anniversary this week, Media Guardian revealed exclusively that the corporation is indeed set to offer up the use of the iPlayer's technology to rival broadcasters, and it's been confirmed as the key plank of a range of measures announced this week, part of the BBC's response to the public service broadcasting review being conducted by Ofcom. Emily, do you think the high-ups at the BBC were listening to last week's podcast?
I think they've been listening all along.
Yes.
So we've been saying, haven't we, share their toys, different kind of conversation with the BBC, and this is the first step towards it. I am going to be, for a change, completely uncynical about this and say I think it's an unalloyed good thing. I think it's...
Unalloyed, good thing.
Unalloyed, that's what yes, exactly. I think that they are small steps, but really significant ones, because actually for them to deliver something through this would be such a massive change in the direction of the BBC and how it thinks about its services and how it thinks about its role in the media. It's easy to be cynical, and so they are not top-slicing themselves, they are more sort of top-shaving themselves,
okay.
A tiny trim, it's to avoid... having to give more money to Channel 4, but I think it's got to be the beginning of a completely renegotiated BBC, which is a good thing.
And this is the point, isn't it, James, is that it's not so much about exactly what they're doing, although what they're doing is very interesting, it's about the fact that they're just doing it at all.
Yeah, although the cynical view would be, it falls to me to put the cynical view, because it is so easy, isn't it, would be that just that it is a desperate attempt to avoid Channel 4 getting their hands on A, any of the licence fee, and B, on worldwide, which is becoming more and more profitable, isn't it? So, yeah, I do feel sorry for the BBC, because they develop worldwide. I think Emily's touched on this before, partly because they're preparing for the possibility of a licence, of the world after a licence fee.
But, I mean...
They do it, they get Channel 4 saying, we'll have some of that, please. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Emily, I suppose, does it really matter what the motivations are? The fact is that perhaps the BBC has, as James has pointed out, seen the way the wind was blowing and is bowing to the wind. But that's a good thing.
I think it is a good thing. And I do think that, you know, some of this will be in the delivery of it. Because having sort of set out on this path, if the BBC now muck it up, I don't think there will be much alternative but to redistribute some of their funding. Mm. You know, that actually...
Could be too late, you're saying. The debate might have gone on down the road.
I think if it fails, it's because the BBC is just institutionally incapable. Its reflex is now all about competition. It's not about development of platforms for everybody to share. It's not about development of content for everybody to share. And so if its reflexes are in the wrong place, and then that's a sort of a much bigger problem for the BBC, because it then has to be tailored to a size which does not drown competition. And at the moment, that would mean making it considerably smaller.
And I guess, James, there's no surprise that Channel 4 statement this week in response to the BBC proposals was decidedly downbeat, because they must be really scared now that everyone will say, oh, yes, that's a fantastic idea that the BBC's got. Never mind about Channel 4.
Yeah, remarkably quick, weren't they, to say this is just not enough. I think the radio stuff is interesting as well, isn't it? Trying to come to the rescue of DAB radio. And that has to be welcomed, I think.
And again, sort of Lord Carter was saying that this week, which is, you know, there might actually have to be a public service. I've been having very interesting to and fro with some people in the radio industry this week just on DAB. And actually, DAB is working incredibly well for some startup businesses. And where it's not working at all well is for commercial players that also have to maintain an FM service at the same time. If the platform is developed, I think, you know, the internet is the ultimate platform, but this is an interim technology. And arguably, we will need it for sort of 5 or 6 years. Maybe that should come out of public purse, come out of the BBC's funding, whatever, but be shared by everybody.
We're going to talk a bit more about the radio end of things shortly, but let's just stick with the prospects for Channel 4 out of all of this. It doesn't look good for Channel 4 if everyone goes for this instead of the Ofcom's proposed plans, the £150 million funding gap.
No, that's absolutely right. This is very bad news for Channel 4 if the way that Parliament see this playing out is actually as a sort of a decent compromise, and they don't see any need to really sort of follow the logic that says Channel 4 is the future of
because these proposals that the BBC is putting address the wider issue than just Channel 4, public service broadcasting
They speak to, you know, the idea that there can be plurality in public service provision without there being entirely defined public service players. So in other words, you know, kind of we might be doing stuff at The Guardian, which is broadly public service. We ought to have some help for that, perhaps. Same goes for any other media company. Why should it be Channel 4? I think Ofcom very sort of clearly set out what it felt were the arguments for Channel 4. In other words, you know, broadcast can reach people in a way that at the moment other media can't. It has a different kind of impact. Mm. We need plurality specifically in that market. That's an argument which feels increasingly like it's going to sort of become slightly sort of out of date.
You mentioned radio a few minutes ago, and the BBC's Knight in Shining Armour Act doesn't end with online on-demand TV. The corporation, as we were talking about, is also rumoured to be bailing out the Digital One DAB multiplex. Now, all of this has come about since the collapse of Channel 4 Radio, who, I'm sure you'll be equally surprised to find out, had a seat at this week's Radio Academy Hall of Fame lunch in London.
I was first told that I'd never work again in this business in 1968 by a guy called Peter Bryan at the New Zealand Broadcasting Corporation when I resigned from there. I've been told that I would never work again in this business twice since. It wasn't so scary the second time. In the third time, I thought, well, stuff it, I might as well carry on.
Simon Bates there, happily accepting his Lifetime Achievement Award. Simon, can I be the fourth and hopefully the last person to tell you it is now time to hang up your microphone? Anyway, the suits from the radio industry were in a sorry old state at this do, it has to be said. But perhaps there's a glimmer of hope now that the BBC has said it may put some of its stations onto the Digital One platform. James, what do you make of this? Is it the job of the BBC, as one of the commenters on the Media Guardian website was saying today, is it the job of the BBC to prop up DAB if it can't be a commercial success on its own?
Well, I think it is. I mean, I think clearly it is, with all that, you know, licence fee money, taxpayers' money. It is a job of the BBC. I'm just sceptical about the platform, the merits of the platform, because, I mean, you know, our DAB radio is going to be flying off the shelves this Christmas, because you always get told this Christmas, well, millions are going to be sold.
Lord knows the BBC is promoting them enough.
Advertised on the BBC.
I just think, you know, unlike Freeview, they always say, oh, it's like this could be the radio equivalent of Freeview. But unlike Freeview, there are very few channels you can't get on analogue radio, conventional radio, that you can get on digital radio.
But you see, my eyes have been slightly open to this correspondence with people that I'm friends with on Twitter, just to make me sound particularly sad. Because I posed a question earlier on my Twitter feed about whether or not we should be bothering with DAB as a commercial proposition, and actually the BBC should do it all. And what was interesting, actually, is I got a couple of responses from people saying, well, look, we're actually finding that we're innovating, not existing businesses, but new radio businesses onto DAB, and we're making money out of them. And we can't do without the hours that DAB gives us. So for us, actually, the idea that we could go just to internet is sort of too early, because you can't find stations on it. And I think that's the interesting bit of the story that hasn't really been told, which is we know about the commercial broadcasters giving back their licences because they can't afford the price of DAB. But as a kind of a platform for innovation for the moment, I think that, you know, that if the BBC is, if it's going to be carried by anyone, it has to be carried by the BBC. It's not a commercial proposition, and ultimately, and probably in fairly short order, it will all move to the internet. But there will be a gap, and I do think the BBC in all sorts of areas is going to have to fill the gap. It's like, again, Stephen Carter said this week, the licence fee now is more important than ever, because we just don't know what's going to happen to all of these things.
But the real killer, of course, the real killer for commercial radio, and it's pretty expensive, of course, for the BBC as well, although the effect is not as bad, is the cost of broadcasting on two platforms at the same time, analogue and digital, and with no prospect of digital of analogue, I should say, being switched off.
Well, I think this is an interesting thing for all sorts of media companies at the moment, which is how do you support two separate business models? And God knows, you know, in print we're seeing the fallout of this. And you look in America now, there are sort of several papers, Christian Science Monitor, you know, a couple of other publications, regional publications.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Chicago Tribune Group shortly.
And they're going, but they're going online only, because they can't actually, you know, make the figures work for both web and paper, and they've got to decide which way to go. And actually, I sort of think that the radio companies with two platforms are in exactly the same position, and it is too expensive, particularly in the recession. But for new entrants, potentially DAB has something.
Okay. Yeah. The fact that Channel 4 Radio had a table, even though it doesn't exist, at the at that event.
They're clearly not that desperate for money, are they?
Well, it made me think of a potential new program format, a gardening leave question time.
Oh!
Very good. Thank you. Let's wrap that up there. If you have anything to say about the opened-up iPlayer or the future of Digital One, post your comments on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Still to come, we look at the decline of one of America's biggest media powerhouses. And...
Well, it's quite obvious what that is. That is one dirty old shoe. Whatever is the use of one shoe?
We pay tribute to Oliver Postgate, a true visionary of children's TV. But before we get to all of that, let's pick up on some of the other media stories of the past 7 days. Now, James, the Mail on Sunday has revealed that it's going to be opening up its own record label. Mail on Sunday Sounds.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? And I think Peter Wright said, what was his quote, that he wanted to do something fresh and exciting and new or something like that. So the first thing we're going to do is a cover of Holy Night. Brilliant.
Fabulous.
But no, why not, I suppose? I mean, it does give you all sorts of fantastic ideas for what they could release, doesn't it? Like, I thought of The Best of the Gypsy Kings, maybe one that they could come out with.
Daily Mail tracks. I haven't prepared anything for this.
Well, there were loads on the Media Guardian website. In fact, there were pages and pages of them.
Too busy twittering.
Kieran Logue on our Facebook wall says there should be laws against such assaults on the music industry. But
maybe
I don't.
There should be laws against such assaults on the listener. I don't mind the bloody music industry.
I don't imagine, however, that Madonna will be releasing her new album on the Mail on Sunday Sounds, given that she's suing them for.
I was going to say,
£5 million.
Depends what she does with the £5 million she gets. She could, you know, set up her own rival.
She's already got one. Yeah.
But perhaps the record industry should invest in newspapers.
I think, do you know, that's a great idea, isn't it? This is brought to you by Rough Trade.
Get a free newspaper with every CD you buy.
I think that's the way
forward. Isn't it?
You'd find hundreds of CDs discarded in recycling bins as people rush to take the Daily Express home with them.
Marvellous. I think we should move on to a few other stories this week. ITV is relaunching its website.
Have I been asleep and woken up in the past?
This is Project Penguin, is it? Right.
This is Project Penguin.
Right.
So we had Project Kangaroo, now Project Penguin. How many,
you know how penguins kind of fall over a lot and fall through holes in the ice? It's a bit like that. Pop up from nowhere.
They have rebranded their player, the ITV player. Did you see where they got that from?
Yeah, ITV player.
Watch out
for the Sky player.
Yes, I've got it. I mean, you know, it's. I guess there's no such thing as an original idea. But anyway, ITV.com you know, ITV just, it's always had a rubbish website.
I just ceased to care. I got so angry with the I'm a Celebrity website, which I just couldn't find anything I wanted to say. Nothing told me. They ought to get someone to look at the utility of this for the user.
Why is it, you know, James, that if you want to go back and watch the best bits from The X Factor, and, you know, there are, or, you know, if you're a fan of The X Factor,
I am, and there are lots of good bits.
You can't find them on the ITV.com website. You've got to go to YouTube.
Well, until now, because they're all new, singing, dancing, Penguin website, all those problems are solved.
But you still can't, because I don't think they're going to sort of necessarily sort of chop it up and sort of tag it properly, which in the way that YouTube does. So, I mean, it is just, I don't know, it's like one of those things, I'm so bored with the idea of ITV rebranding,
but this is the problem. But this
upgrading.
Is the problem, is it, that ITV, the brand ITV, is all about Coronation Street, X Factor, and so on. The BBC, it's slightly different.
Yeah,
it's a brand in its own right. Where ITV, you really need a Coronation Street website.
Yeah,
CoronationStreet.com, not ITV.com, and then onto Coronation Street.
There's our consultancy fees for free. Yeah. We'll waive our consultancy fees.
That's £5,000 an hour of anyone's money, isn't it?
Now, Google's top searches of 2008?
Oh, yeah.
Have you got them?
I haven't got them, actually.
The iPlayer at number one.
iPlayer at number one. This is amazing. Not... Can I just say, these are the filtered...
They've taken out the filthy
these
ones.
These are filtered. This is not the top search term
Teen
on
Sex
Google.
Wars is not on
well,
there.
Well, you know about the very entertaining DCMS visiting Google story, don't you? What? Which they had a rather... The DCMS Select Committee visited Google, where they put all the search terms up on a massive board.
Oh, really?
It's a rolling board in the reception. John Whittingdale told me this, so it's true. He was there. And as their host from Google, who apparently was quite pompous, was showing it to them, saying these are people searching for everything all around the world. And they said, oh, do you get mucky ones on there? Oh, no. This is properly filtered, etc. As she was saying it, the words, and I apologise, block your ears, switch it off before your children hear, the words pre-teen animal fucking appeared above her head, apparently.
That's brilliant. And then One Night in Paris, but like that.
Yes, exactly. Back to the non-smutty version.
Yes.
I play a Facebook iPhone, because people search for rubbish things like YouTube. Do they not know how to use the URL
YouTube.com.
No, YouTube, no, but you see, this is Yahoo Mail. Can I just say, Large Hadron Collider. Finally. Yes. Finally, Obama. Friv.
Well, exactly. What are the bottom three? Friv, Camfor, and Jogos?
Jogos. I mean,
this is Jogos? Just people
these are web things.
This is rubbish.
These web things. I
thought they were just typos.
And porn.
Exactly, absolutely. Right, thank you for that. Let's put all that to one side as we turn our attention to America. There was another huge blow dealt to the US's struggling media industry this week as one of its biggest beasts filed for bankruptcy. The Tribune Company, which runs some of America's most prestigious newspaper titles, like the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune, has accumulated debts of around $13 billion. The Guardian's New York correspondent, Ed Pilkington, has been covering the story. I spoke to him earlier.
It's a very, very big company. It's based in Chicago, but it spans coast to coast, and it's got 12 different major newspapers and 23 TV companies, and often those operate together within a city and have a media monopoly in certain cities. So it's really got a big presence right across the states.
The Chicago Tribune itself is quite an institution. What, founded 1847 and printed all the words from the Watergate tape, didn't it?
Yeah, within 24 hours they made history by putting out a 44-page supplement with all the Watergate tapes, every single word of them in the supplement. And that was considered a huge feat and a huge sort of record. And I suppose that, in a sense, sums up their problems, because, you know, the idea that one would come out with something like that 24 hours, fully 24 hours after a story breaks, is now laughable, because, of course, it goes up in seconds on the internet. And that's part of the problem that they're having.
What is it that's hitting the Chicago Tribune Group particularly? Is it the general problem that we've seen all across America, the downturn in advertising and the downturn in revenue for regional and city newspaper groups?
Yeah, Samuel Zell, who's a controversial owner of the company who bought it last year, described it as a perfect storm. Two of the three parts are sort of out of his control, and they are the general advertising downturn that's hit everybody and the migration to the internet, which is also hitting all media companies. But the third part, which he didn't really go into any detail about, was his own actions, because when he bought the company last year, he took on an enormous amount of debt. At the time he bought it, the company was already sort of slightly overloaded with $5 billion of debt. And by buying it, he added on another $8 billion of debt. So it's now got about $13 billion of debt. And the basic problem is it can no longer pay the interest payments on that debt. even though it still makes a profit, but it can't meet those payments anymore.
You mentioned Samuel Zell. He's the owner, and he's a property billionaire, isn't he? And what makes him such a colourful character?
Well, his use of language is very rich. You know, soon after he bought the company, he went round all these very august newspapers with very, very senior and well-respected journalists, not least the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune, and basically swore at them to their faces, saying they were obsessed with hard news, they didn't understand the value of entertainment, and they should be more like television journalists, which, as you can imagine, didn't go down entirely well. He has no track record in newspapers, and kind of the mystery of this story is partly why he bought the group in the first place, with no particular interest in newspapers, and at a time when everyone knew already that American newspapers were in a lot of trouble. So that's part of the mystery, why he did it, and now how he's going to get himself out of it, because going into bankruptcy will probably lead to a whole new round of cuts. They've already cut lots and lots, hundreds of journalists from their newsrooms within the group, and people are starting to wonder where they can cut further.
There is an interesting sidebar to this story, isn't there, that concerns the president-elect Barack Obama and alleged corruption by the governor in the president-elect's home state of Illinois. What's that all about?
Yeah, I'm there. Well, the headline is that the governor tried to sell Barack Obama's old seat to the highest bidder, which is, you know, which is ambitious and courageous, particularly as he was being wiretapped by the FBI at the time.
Particularly in a credit crunch as well.
And in a credit crunch. I'm not sure he found any buyers coming forward. But as a sideline to that, it emerged through these FBI wiretaps that he was also threatening the Chicago Tribune and demanding that unless they sacked several editors and writers on their comment page who had been critical of him, the governor of Illinois, he would block a deal that's absolutely crucial to getting Sam Zell and the rest of the group out of its current financial troubles, which was the sale of the Chicago Cubs, a very big baseball team in Chicago, that they now want to sell in order to pay off some of this debt. So a pretty brazen effort on his part, on the governor of Illinois' part, to blackmail, essentially, the newspaper into sacking critics of him.
Ed Pilkington there. We should probably add allegedly to that final bit. Emily and James, let's bring you back into the discussion. Are the US papers, Emily, feeling the pinch more than British titles?
Yes, but well, their economic downturn has been going on for longer. The subprime mortgage cratering of the economy took place about sort of nine months to a year ago. So you are seeing the Tribune's file for Chapter 11. I mean, obviously, lots of people in the States file for bankruptcy and don't go belly up, but it's still kind of fairly bad news. New York Times is remortgaging its, or rather kind of mortgaging half of its headquarters to raise money.
$250 million. Yeah,
yeah, that's right, $250 million.
Obviously not reading its own editorial about toxic mortgages.
No, indeed. And lots of really sort of quite iconic and old regional newspapers have shut down, just disappeared.
And of course, back in the UK, it's pretty bad, bleak picture too, James, with NewsQuest restructuring in the Northwest and all these redundancies we're seeing all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, 2009 is going to be a terrible year, isn't it? I think more job cuts across nationals and more regional closures. I mean, there's some similar trends that began in the US, competition for the internet and so on, that we know all about, coming to the UK with a vengeance. I mean, but I wonder if Obama might bail out the Tribune.
Bail out the newspapers.
Bail out the newspaper industry. Do it with the cars, do it with the banks. Because I think a few of his chief of staff used to be a political reporter on the Tribune, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Loads of them did, actually, so who knows?
Who knows? There we are. Well, you heard it here first. Enough doom and gloom, though if you do want to continue to self-flagellate, there's plenty more opportunity at mediaguardian.co.uk. Now then, here's something to cheer us up.
Bagpuss, dear Bagpuss, old fat furry catpuss, wake up and look at this thing that I bring. Wake up, be bright, be golden and light. Bagpuss, oh, hear what I sing.
Guardian's TV writer Gareth McLean's just joined us in the pod.
I often have that effect.
Well, yeah, making people yawn.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Were you a Bagpuss child, Gareth?
I was a Bagpuss child, yeah. I loved Bagpuss and Ivor the Engine and Noggin the Nog.
Well, and
much underrated.
Look what I've got here. It's a
put that away, you naughty boy.
Can I hold your clanger?
Did you bring a pair of tweezers with you, Emily?
Gareth,
Lord.
I always thought the clangers were a bit creepy.
Yeah,
very, very sinister. Very sinister.
Very sinister.
It's a clanger.
Stop it.
It's a clanger. I think it's a hot water bottle holder.
It's a clangorama, isn't it?
It actually belongs to Jemima Kish. Does it? Brought it in. Anyway, so yeah, Oliver Postgate.
Yes, much sadness, I think, because he had such a lovely voice, and he was all, sort of right on as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. What was your favourite one, Emily? Are you a clanger child?
I'm
Emily,
a clanger, I'm a clanger child.
Showing your ages.
I am showing my ages. At least that's all I'm showing. I am a clanger child, though I did like Pogle's Wood as well, which not many people remember.
I grew up.
Lacey, you're too young for this. I really am old. I grew up in rural Norfolk for the first 8 years of my life, where everyone taught like Pogle's Wood. Oh, Pogle. And they had this really pissed up plant that had clearly been trained at RADA and would not perform unless it had a flagon of elderberry wine.
Was that just shown in the Anglia region?
I think it was.
Normal for Norfolk.
Or maybe, yes, exactly. Or maybe I was fed mushrooms by, you know, my parents, my art teacher parents, and it was a hallucination. He never made anything.
Aren't you just part of the liberal elite?
Yes, I am. I made a career out of it, young man.
Well done. Did you go to Oxbridge, by any chance?
I did.
I never.
I went to a very common school, though.
Well, then, didn't you? Well,
that's
well.
All right, then.
Yeah, clever.
Would you want a round of applause?
I was more of a... I'm going back to bring it back to Oliver Postgate. More of an Ivor the Engine Boy.
Oh, yes, well.
I was very close to Jones the Steam.
Yeah. Right.
I was going to just change gear, so if you wouldn't mind putting the clanger away, it wouldn't be appropriate for this next one. Sky's controversial suicide documentary.
I know. Who could have imagined that anyone at Sky would have been so sad that Richard Wolfe was leaving?
Yes, no. That's not the suicide documentary.
Not that one, sorry. No, the assisted suicide of the man on Sky Real Lives.
Assisted by Dawn Airy. No, sorry. It was, I mean, you know, it's very serious for Sky.
It is very serious for Sky. And I'm sure this has got the biggest ever ratings for Sky Real Lives.
300,000, I think, wasn't it?
Really?
What is Sky Real Lives?
It's like...
Rather inappropriate name for a channel given
the subject of that documentary.
Real Lives and Death.
Real Lives and Death. What did it used to be called?
True Life Stories. Oh, I don't know.
Sky Mix or something like that.
Sky Mix.
But does it give the lie to the idea, Gareth, that people only get outraged when it's the BBC?
I think if this was on the BBC, then there would have been more of an outcry because it would have been our money.
Right.
But I just think what it does is it just shows you that people get up sort of oomphy over anything.
They'll particularly get outraged about things they haven't seen.
Yes.
We know that, don't we? Yes. We already guessed that.
Yes. It's like, okay, tell us something
we don't know. Gordon Brown saying, I think it's this should be treated, no, people shouldn't, you know, this should not be flammed up. And you just thought, nobody cares.
Like a Busby Berkeley style chorus line just as he was slipping off. No, I think it'll be okay. There's not going to be a pressure red button now to see which way we can sort of... Yes. Send him off.
No, quite.
Anyway, I don't understand what all the fuss about assisted suicide is anyway. I think everyone should make plans for end-of-life issues.
I think that's something for the science podcast. on to gentler things. Did you watch Country House Rescue?
If only I could.
I did.
I loved that programme. I thought it was fabulous.
Although it's just another... To me, it's a significant of a deeper malaise of a complete lack of imagination at Channel 4.
Yeah, but they were great old posh people there, weren't they?
Well, yeah.
You can't tell us what to do.
Yes.
Well, we've run this place for 300 years. How dare you?
Run this place into the ground. Yeah, I was sort of finding it a bit hard to be sympathetic.
I thought she looked quite good for 70-odd, whatever her age
That's
was.
That's because they've never done a day's work in their lives.
She'd been in the garden every day for, you know, from dawn till dusk, apparently.
That work.
What, drinking gin and tonic?
That's quite hard work.
I do, which brings us round.
Oh, get you, liberal elite, that passes for fun, doesn't it?
Brings us.
Sitting there reading the New Statesman.
brings us neatly round to the last episode of Spooks, in which a large bottle of gin
A large
features.
Bottle of gin and a smashing old lady. Oh, well, I was... Did Connie redeem herself?
I think she did in the end.
I mean, she certainly blew off her face. But I thought, oh, Connie. I did feel a bit sorry for her making her run round all those tunnels because she fairly looked puggled, as we say in Scotland.
She did, yes.
But yeah, God bless Connie.
It's like being pogled, but with gin.
Yeah,
possibly. Oliver Postgate.
Yeah. All right. So we are going to have a new series of Spooks, aren't we?
Yes, coming back, contrary to what I was speculating about my blog, there will be a new series.
Yes, you were completely
wrong. I was double bluffing in the manner of a spook.
Well, yeah. You concentrated their minds, didn't you?
I did. It gets very high AI.
The clangers waving goodbye.
Oh, is it? Yes.
This is an argument for we should have a camera. We will have a camera in our new studios in King's Cross.
Well, no John Barrowman-esque style flashing from you, thank you.
No.
There you go, medium moral maze. If a man gets his cock out and no one sees it, does it really matter?
Depends if it makes a noise or not.
What's the sound of a tree falling?
One hand clapping.
I think at this point, it's time to draw proceedings to a close.
What about the X Factor? It's the only thing I know anything about.
Well,
I think you should go round the table and ask everyone who you think will win.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'll never get out of this studio. Jesus.
Come on.
Okay, who's going to win the X Factor then, James?
I think Alexandra, isn't she?
Right, then. There we are. We've talked about the X Factor. Thank you. Right, that's it.
And that's who Gordon Brown thinks will win as well.
She's clearly doomed.
Thanks to Gareth McLean, James Robertson, Emily Bell. Now, Emily, you and I have to change our clothes in the manner of Countdown and Deal or No Deal because we're recording another podcast.
We are.
But we have to make it look as if we're
24/7.
Next week.
That's what it is.
Exactly.
In fact, we do nothing but record podcasts until next Tuesday.
For everyone else. If you want to give us your feedback, post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or head to the Facebook group where the language is generally a bit fruitier. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. See you next week. Bye.